From Pacifica Network, this is Democracy Now!, broadcasting from the DNC in Boston, breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency.
Our vote was soaked in the blood of martyrs, soaked in the blood of Goodman, Cheney, and Swanner, soaked in the blood of four little girls in Birmingham. This vote is sacred to us. This vote can't be bargained away.
The Reverend Al Sharpton rocks the House and gives a speech that often veered from his DNC-approved script. He breaks the gag order on attacking President Bush by name and draws some of the most boisterous applause from thousands of delegates at the Fleet Center. Then Democracy Now! Confronts ABC's Ted Koppel of Nightline on the network coverage of the build-up to the invasion of Iraq.
That's a function of perhaps incompetence on my part, but certainly not ill will. And I will try and do better the next time, but I don't think I need to apologize.
We also speak with filmmaker Spike Lee, Congressmember Jesse Jackson Jr. We ask former U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno about the case of imprisoned Native American activist Leonard Peltier. All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!'s Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Here are some of the headlines. Senator John Edwards vowed last night that hope is on the way and asked the country to support the Kerry Edwards ticket. The North Carolina senator said there are still two Americas divided by wealth, but he promised if elected, he would change that.
In this cause, let's make America stronger at home and more respected in the world. Let's ensure that once again, in our one America, tomorrow will always be better than today. Thank you. God bless you. And God bless the United States of America.
Shortly after Senator Edwards finished his speech, Senator John Kerry became the Democratic Party's official nominee. 4,255 delegates threw their support behind his candidacy. The vote, however, was not unanimous. 37 delegates backed the candidacy of Congressman Dennis Kucinich, who ran on an anti-war platform. Outside the Fleet Center in Boston, 15 Democratic delegates staged a protest against the designated protest pen, which has been likened to an internment camp in Guantanamo Bay. One delegate said the so-called free speech zone, which is surrounded by a chain-link fence and razor wire, is, quote, no way to encourage democracy. The protest pen's been largely abandoned by demonstrators who've staged an unofficial boycott of the site. Yesterday, hundreds of demonstrators gathered in Roxbury to protest a plan to build a level 4 bioweapons research lab in a low-income residential area. Opponents of the project say the government has never built a level 4 lab in a highly populated area before. Meanwhile, the Boston-based Black Tea Society has called for a day of action today, featuring a series of decentralized direct action protests. In other convention news, a federal judge ruled that police can randomly search passengers riding on Boston's subway system. The National Lawyers Guild and the American Arab Anti-Discrimination Committee have argued the inspections violate the Fourth Amendment, which protects against unreasonable searches. In Haiti, thousands of supporters of ousted President Jean-Bertrand Aristide marched in Port-au-Prince calling for Aristide's return. The democratically elected president was ousted at the end of February in a U.S.-backed coup. Protesters marched by the U.S. Embassy carrying coffins reading USA and Gerard Latartu, the name of the unelected interim prime minister. Meanwhile, police found the body of a former pro-Aristide legislator, Jocelyn Saint-Louis, on the outskirts of Port-au-Prince on Tuesday. In Iraq, the death toll from yesterday's suicide car bombing in Baquba has risen to 68. The attack came exactly 1 month after the so-called handover of power. and marked one of the deadliest car bombings since the fall of Baghdad. Meanwhile, 35 Iraqi resistance fighters and 7 Iraqi troops were killed south of Baghdad. In Ramadi, gunmen broke into the home of the region's governor, kidnapped his 3 sons, and set the building on fire. All told, more than 120 Iraqis died yesterday. And 2 Pakistani men who were taken hostage in Iraq have been reportedly executed. The dead bodies of the 2 men were shown on a video obtained by Al Jazeera from a group calling itself the Islamic Army in Iraq. Filmmaker Michael Moore has abruptly canceled plans to turn up for a screening of his scathing anti-Bush documentary, Fahrenheit 9/11, in President Bush's local town without offering an explanation. The Texas peace activists organizing the showing of the record-setting anti-war movie at a makeshift outdoor cinema in Crawford, Texas, about 7 miles from the president's ranch, said the filmmaker gave them no reason for the decision. But news of Moore's possible appearance in Crawford may explain. It stirred an angry response from a few residents who planned a pro-Bush rally on the main street. And manure was dumped at the stadium where the film would be shown. Michael Moore actually said he didn't want to be a diversion from the actual showing of the film that he wanted local residents to be able to see. The New York Times has obtained a letter from FBI Director Robert Mueller that says former FBI translator Sybil Edmonds was dismissed from her job in part because she accused the Bureau of ineptitude. The report also found the FBI did not aggressively investigate Edmonds' claims of espionage against a coworker. Edmonds was hired shortly after September 11th to translate intelligence gathered before and after the attacks. She said that U.S. had intelligence that have indicated an attack was imminent. And for the first time since at least World War II, Americans reported to the government earning less income for 2 years in a row. This, according to newly disclosed Internal Revenue Service data, adjusted for inflation, the income of all Americans fell 9.2% between 2000 and 2002.
People, people, gotta get over before we go under. People, people, we gotta get over before we go under. Hey, country, you didn't say what you meant. You just changed brand new funky president. Stock market going up, jobs going down. It ain't no funky job to be found. Tax keep going up. Change from a glass.
This is Democracy Now! Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman. Yes, welcome to Democracy Now! Broadcasting from Cambridge Community Television, just across the river from Boston's Fleet Center, where the Democratic National Convention has entered its final day. John Kerry officially nominated as the Democratic Party's presidential candidate late last night after his running mate John Edwards gave his primetime address on the floor of the convention. After Edwards' speech, convention delegates proceeded through the traditional roll call of states. At the end of the night, Kerry had 4,255 votes, Ohio Congress member Dennis Kucinich, 37. The roll call was reportedly scripted to allow Ohio, an important battleground state, to cast the decisive vote. Edwards will officially be nominated as the vice presidential candidate later today. The third night of the Democratic National Convention featured a number of notable speakers, including the Reverend Jesse Jackson, Congressmember Dennis Kucinich, and the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus, Elijah Cummings. But it was the Reverend Al Sharpton who stole the show. The former presidential candidate was frequently interrupted with cheers and applause during a rousing address that rocked the Fleet Center. Sharpton repeatedly departed from his DNC-approved prepared text. Yes, it had been scrubbed by John Kerry's staff, slamming the Bush administration on Iraq and domestic issues. This is the full address of Reverend Al Sharpton.
I want to address my remarks in 2 parts. One, I'm honored to address the delegates here. Last Friday, I had the experience in Detroit of hearing President George Bush make a speech. And in the speech, he asked certain questions. I hope he's watching tonight. I would like to answer your questions, Mr. President. To our chairman, our delegates, and all that assembled We're honored and glad to be here tonight. I'm glad to be joined by supporters and friends from around the country. I'm glad to be joined by my family, Kathy, Dominique, who will be 18, and Ashley. We are here 282 years after, right here in Boston, we fought to establish the freedoms of America. The first person to die in the Revolutionary War is buried not far from here, a black man from Barbados named Crispus Attucks. 40 years ago, in 1964, Fannie Lou Hamer and the Mississippi Freedom Democratic Party stood at the Democratic Convention in Atlantic City fighting to preserve voting rights for all Americans and all Democrats, regardless of race or gender. Hamer's stand inspired Dr. King's march in Selma, which brought about the Voting Rights Act of 1965. 20 years ago, Reverend Jesse Jackson stood at the Democratic National Convention in San Francisco, again appealing to preserve those freedoms. Tonight, we stand with those freedoms at risk and our security as citizens in question. I have come here tonight to say the only choice we have to preserve our freedom at this point in history is to elect John Kerry, the President of the United States. I stood with both John Kerry and John Edwards over 30 occasions in debates during the primary season. I not only debated them, I watched them. I observed their deeds. I looked into their eyes. I am convinced that they are men who say what they mean and mean what they say. I am also convinced that at a time when a vicious spirit in the body politic of this country that attempts to undermine America's freedoms, our civil rights, our civil liberties, we must leave this city and go forth and organize this nation for victory for our party and John Kerry and John Edwards in November. But let me quickly say, this is not just about winning an election. It's about preserving the principles on which this very nation was founded. Look at the current view of our nation worldwide as a result of our unilateral foreign policy. We went from unprecedented international support and solidarity on September 12, 2001, to hostility and hatred as we stand here tonight. We can't survive in the world by ourselves. We squandered this opportunity to unite the world for democracy and to commit to the global fight against hunger and disease. We did it with a going-alone foreign policy based on flawed intelligence. We were told that we were going to Iraq because there were weapons of mass destruction. We lost hundreds of soldiers. We spent $200 billion at a time we had record state deficits. And when it became clear that there were no weapons, they changed the premise for the war and said, no, we went because of other reasons. If I told you tonight to let's leave the fleet center, we're in danger. And when you get outside, you ask me, Reverend Al, what is the danger? And I say, it don't matter, we just needed some fresh air. I have misled you, and we were misled. We faced with the prospect of, in the next 4 years, that two or more Supreme Court justices' seats will become available. This year, we celebrated the anniversary of Brown versus the Board of Education. This court has voted 5-4 on critical issues of women's rights and civil rights. It is frightening to think that the gains of civil and women's rights and those movements in the last century could be reversed if this administration is in the White House in these next 4 years. I suggest to you tonight that if George Bush had selected the court in 54, Clarence Thomas would have never got to law school. Quality education for all children and not spend more money on metal detectors than computers in our schools. The promise of America guarantees health care for all of its citizens and doesn't force seniors to travel to Canada to buy prescription drugs they can't afford here at home.
The Reverend Al Sharpton addressing the Democratic National Convention. We'll come back to his speech in a minute. James Brown, Say It Loud, I'm Black and I'm Proud, here on Democracy Now!, Breaking with Convention, War, Peace, and the Presidency. I'm Amy Goodman as we continue with the speech of the Reverend Al Sharpton on the floor of the Democratic National Convention. The speeches were all supposed to be vetted. His was, but he veered from the Democratic Party-approved script.
The promise of America is that every citizen's vote is counted and protected, and election schemes do not decide the election. It, to me, is a glaring contradiction that we would fight, and rightfully so, to get the right to vote for the people in the capital of Iraq and Baghdad, but still don't give the federal right to vote for the people in the capital of the United States in Washington, D.C. Mr. President, as I close, Mr. President, I heard you say Friday that you had questions for voters, particularly African-American voters. And you asked the question, did the Democratic Party take us for granted? Well, I have raised questions, but let me answer your question. You said the Republican Party was the party of Lincoln and Frederick Douglass. It is true that Mr. Lincoln signed the Emancipation Proclamation, after which there was a commitment to give 40 acres and a mule. That's where the argument to this day of reparations started. We never got the 40 acres. We went all the way to Herbert Hoover, and we never got the 40 acres. We didn't get the mule. So we decided we'd ride this donkey as far as it would take us. Tradition. Those that have emerged with John Kerry and John Edwards as partners, like Greg Meeks, like Obama, Baraka, like our voter registration director, Marjorie Harris, like those that are in the trenches. And we come with strong family values. Family values is not just those with two-car garages and a retirement plan. Retirement plans are good, but family values also those who had to make nothing stretch into something happening, who had to make ends meet. I was raised by a single mother who made a way for me. She used to scrub floors as a domestic worker, put a cleaning rag in a pocketbook, and ride the subways in Brooklyn so I'd have food on the table. But she taught me as I walked into that subway that life is about not where you start, but where you're going. That's family values. And And I wanted somebody in my community. I wanted to show that example. As I ran for president, I hoped that one child that come out of the ghetto like I did could look at me, walk across the stage with governors and senators, and know they didn't have to be a drug dealer. They didn't have to be a hoodlum. They didn't have to be a gangster. They could stand up from a broken home on welfare, and they could run for president of the United States. In New York. I was there September 11th when that despicable act of terrorism happened. A few days after, I left home. My family had taken in even a young man who lost his family. And as they gave comfort to him, I had to do a radio show that morning. When I got there, my friend James Ntoume said, "Reverend, we're going to stop at a certain hour and play a song synchronized with 990 other stations." I said, "That's fine." He said, "We're dedicating it to the victims of 9/11. I said, "What song are you playing?" He said, "We're playing America the Beautiful." In the particular station I was at, they played that rendition sung by Ray Charles. As you know, we lost Ray a few weeks ago, but I sat there that morning and listened to Ray sing through those speakers, "Oh, beautiful for spacious skies, for ample ways of grain, for purple mountains, majesty, across the fruited plain." And it occurred to me as I heard Ray singing that Ray wasn't singing about what he knew. Because Ray had been blind since he was a child. He hadn't seen many purple mountains. He hadn't seen many fruited plains. He was singing about what he believed to be. "Mr. President, we love America. Not because of all of us have seen the beauty all the time, but we believed if we kept on working, if we kept on marching, if we kept on voting, if we kept on believing, we would make America beautiful for everybody. Start November, let's make America beautiful again." Thank you, and God bless you.
The Reverend Al Sharpton, the former Democratic presidential candidate, speaking last night on the floor of the Democratic National Convention. After his address, we caught up with him just before he left the Fleet Center.
Reverend Sharpton, do you think Senator Kerry and Senator Edwards should be expressing more dissent against the war, against the USA Patriot Act, where most of the delegates stand here?
I think that they have a responsibility to win, but I think they should also deal with the question of Iraq. And I think that as the president is taking on an issue, not bashing the president to take him on issues. And I think the reaction to my speech showed that the delegates want that. I never called him a name. He threw the gauntlet down on black voters to infer something's wrong with us. Why are we voting Democrat? So I answered him. So now to answer him is the bashing. Was he bashing us? I think that he can sometimes be so cautious that we don't energize and galvanize our own base. And I wanted to do that tonight.
And do you think Senator Kerry is making that mistake?
Again, he'll have to decide that. I'm not here to critique him. I think all of us need to stand up and state why we are for Kerry and why we are against Bush.
How do you prevent a repeat of Florida?
I think that you're going to have to really go down and monitor those elections. You're going to have to support the legislation that is knocking out these schemes that are calling already again for methods that will suppress that vote.
George Bush not going to the NAACP dinner? George Bush not going to the NAACP
dinner? I think it was indicative of his feelings, which is why I laid them out today. And I think anyone would agree with me. He intends to appoint a conservative court. He intends to continue in the ways he has, and that's why we need to defeat him.
Do you think he was trying to mobilize his base by doing that, by not attending?
I don't know, but I was trying to mobilize mine by pointing it out.
The Reverend Al Sharpton inside the Fleet Center just after his address. Just before that interview, we spotted Spike Lee, the Academy Award-winning director, standing quietly by the door beside Reverend Al Sharpton and his family.
What do you think of the convention?
And what do you think? I mean, I just got here and I'm leaving. I came to see Reverend Al speak.
And what'd you think?
He rocked the mic.
What do you think of Senator Kerry?
I'm all for him. Senator for Edwards, you know, we've got to change the direction this country's going.
Do you think?
And that direction's going to hell.
What do you think of the invasion?
I didn't drink the Kool-Aid.
The platform here is not against war. There's very little expression against war or the USA Patriot Act, even though the overwhelming number of majority of delegates are against both.
Well, look, that's something they could work on. The first point of business is to get Bush out of office this coming November.
Which way do you think we do it? Kerry moving to the right or expressing more dissent?
I don't think it's a question of moving to the left or the right. I just think if you speak clearly to the American people on what is happening, they're going to make the smart decision. I really feel that.
What do you think are the gravest issues that have to be addressed right now?
Here? We're going to talk about, you know, this. The United States playing the role of the policeman all around the world. I think we've got to really deal with public education, too, you know. Got to deal with violence. There's a plethora of issues got to deal with, you know. It's no joke being the President of the United States of America. You know, you just don't play golf all the time. Oops.
What about the people who don't vote, which is the majority of people in this country?
I think it's everybody's job. A lot of people getting out there to mobilize people to register people to vote. People going to show up. And hopefully their votes got to be counted this time.
Are you doing anything to get people out to vote?
I tell everybody, see, vote, vote, vote. Everywhere I go in America.
What about those who say, but the Democratic candidate, John Kerry and John Edwards, they didn't vote against the invasion, they voted for it. Where's the difference?
Look, that might be the case, but if we want to get our boys, our women and men out of Iraq, we better vote for Kerry and Edwards. I don't want the draft coming back. That's what's going to happen. The Bush wins.
Stay right there.
Come on. How do you think Halliburton's going to win? How do you think Halliburton's going to make money if there's no war? You don't think they want to get another $8 billion contract without a bid? Shoot, they'll probably double, you know. They got $8 million this time. The next war, they get $16 billion.
What role do you think Hollywood can play in this?
Hey, Michael Moore, he's made a difference. And you watch, the day after election, don't be surprised if people say the difference was Fahrenheit 9/11. Don't sleep on it. Thank you.
That was Academy Award-winning filmmaker Spike Lee, speaking to us just inside the Fleet Center, part of the Reverend Al Sharpton entourage after Reverend Sharpton's address. Earlier in the evening, we caught up with Illinois Congress member Jesse Jackson, Jr. As a Democratic platform committee member, Congressmember Jackson led the campaign for voting rights and made sure the platform included language ensuring that, quote, every vote is counted fully and fairly. We spoke with Congressmember Jackson as he was leaving the convention center.
Yes.
I wanted to ask, the overwhelming number of delegates here are opposed to war, opposed to the USA Patriot Act, yet we don't see that reflected in the platform or from the podium.
Well, there are a couple of important points to recognize. First, I am opposed to the war, and I am opposed to the Patriot Act. I even filed a lawsuit here in Massachusetts in federal court with John Boniface and a number of other members of Congress because I didn't feel the president had sufficient authorization to go to war. With that said, the electorate right now is evenly divided, 45% for Kerry, 45% for Bush. And there's about 10% of the voters out there who have not made up their mind whether they're going to vote for Kerry or for Bush. And while the war was wrong, and we are there on a misconceived notion of weapons of mass destruction, the reality is we are there now. And the Kerry administration and the Democratic Party is not going to cut and run. We are going to finish the task, we're going to establish democracy, and then we're going to bring our men and women home.
Yesterday, Barack Obama said the problem with the invasion was the president didn't commit enough troops.
The problem with the invasion was the president misled the American people. And so State Senator, soon-to-be Senator Barack Obama and I have a different take on that question. It wasn't that there wasn't enough troops. We have Saddam Hussein in jail. We have locked up most of the members of the deck of cards that President Bush went after. The problem is the rationale for the war. The problem with preemptive strikes as opposed to a multilateral force, a war of choice over and against a war of necessity, is the central problem. But we are there now. We have lost credibility in the world as a result of our being there, and now we have to restore that credibility. We should finish the job at hand, we should bring our men and women home as soon as possible and establish the necessary diplomatic ties and let the Iraqi people make a determination about their own future.
Chicago Congressmember Jesse Jackson Jr. speaking to us outside the convention center last night. One of the opportunities these conventions provide is to ask questions of people we don't normally have access to. And it's not just the politicians. In fact, some more powerful than the politicians, that is the press. When we come back from our break, we bring you Ted Koppel and talk with him about his coverage of war, as well as his networks and the others. We'll also speak with the former Attorney General of Florida, Janet Reno. Stay with us. This is Democracy Now!, democracynow.org, breaking with convention, war, peace, and the presidency. I am Amy Goodman, and this final day of the Democratic National Convention, a day of protests has been called in Boston just as we went to air today. Dozens of bicyclists began taking part in a critical mass bike ride through downtown Boston. There were more than 40 police officers on bicycles there as well. Tremendous security presence at this Democratic convention, more than $60 million spent on it around the city. Well, there are some 15,000 journalists crammed into the Fleet Center. America's most recognizable news people roam the halls. Some, like Sean Hannity of the Fox News Channel, have seemed to have their own security details. Yesterday, we saw him walking with Boston police and security around him. We were able to catch up with Ted Koppel, the host of ABC's Nightline, just outside the Fleet Center. We asked him about the network news coverage of the buildup to the invasion of Iraq.
Do you think that ABC and the other networks should apologize for providing an uncritical forum for the administration to lay out their unsubstantiated claims of weapons of mass destruction.
I'm glad you phrased your question so nicely. No, I don't think an apology is due if what you are saying is, could we all have been more critical? I think the answer is yes. I must tell you, I'm going to be responsive in behalf of Nightline, over which I do have some control. We did do a 90-minute town hall meeting, the title of which was Why Now? And the essence of which was, where is the evidence that there is an immediate danger to the United States? Did we do enough programs like that? I concede we did not. But, you know, that's a function of perhaps incompetence on my part, but certainly not ill will. And I will try and do better the next time, but I don't think I need to apologize for it.
A study of the 2 weeks around Colin Powell giving his address at the UN for war looked at the four major nightly newscasts, ABC, right. NBC, CBS, and the PBS NewsHour with Jim Lehrer. Of the 393 interviews done around war, only three were with anti-war representatives. Now, this was at a time when about half the population was opposed to the invasion, wanting more inspections and diplomacy.
Right.
So that did not reflect mainstream America at all.
No, but I where is it written that it is a journalist's responsibility to go check the polls every day and see what mainstream America wants them to do?
But three of almost 400 interviews with anti-war representatives, that is so skewed to the pro-war voice.
Look, I agree with you, but I must ask you in return, what would you have looked to for evidence that there were no weapons of mass destruction? There was evidence in 1998 that those weapons of mass destruction not only existed, but were present in, just let me finish the point, not only existed, but were present in Iraq. It did not make logical sense that Saddam Hussein, whose armies had been defeated once before by the United States and the coalition, would be prepared to lose control over his country if all he had to do was say, all right, UN, come on in, check it out. I will show you, give you whatever evidence you want to have, let you interview whomever you want to interview. Logically, at that time, it seemed as though weapons of mass destruction. Did I believe at the time that there were weapons of mass destruction? Absolutely, I did.
Well, let me look at September 2002. Bush and Blair have their news conference at Camp David. They say an IAEA report has just come out that alleges that Saddam Hussein will get nuclear weapons within 6 months.
Yeah.
This was 6 months away from before the invasion.
Sure.
Almost no mainstream reporter in this country reported there was no such IAEA report.
I can take you back to 1990, for example, when the evidence from the CIA was that there was no indication that the Iraqis had any kind of a nuclear program. After the war, they found all kinds of evidence that they were much further along.
They were citing an IAEA report, and it didn't exist. And then what about Kamal Hussein, the son-in-law of Saddam Hussein?
Yes.
He said, he was quoted repeatedly by the press when they liked what he said, when he was anti-Saddam Hussein, when he said we destroyed the weapons of mass destruction after the Gulf War, then the press did not pick up on this. I mean, it's these kinds of issues where the voices that they would cite for other issues.
I am saying to you, I mean, we can go around this as often as you like.
Let me ask a bigger question.
Well, if you're going to let me answer the first one before you ask me the next one. I am saying to you that it did not make any sense that Saddam Hussein would run the risk of being overthrown, of losing all the power that he had, if indeed in 2003 he had no weapons of mass destruction. Why in heaven's name did he not permit the kinds of inspections and the kinds of interviews that would have demonstrated that to the world's satisfaction? I'm not saying that now I believe there were weapons of mass destruction immediately before the war, but I can understand why our leaders and why many of us in the media were inclined to believe that at the time.
do you support the network's policy, ABC and the others, of putting military officials?
That's right. But we'll do two more.
Okay.
Having asked for one question, you're now on your seventh.
And then I'll give you a book as a reward.
Thank you.
Do you support the networks, including ABC's policy of putting retired generals, other military officials on the payroll, yet not putting peace activists on the payroll?
Yes, I do.
Why?
I do. Because I think there is a certain level of expertise that comes with having been, for example, a four-star general, or we have Richard Clark, let's say, is one of our paid consultants on ABC. I wish that we could go back to the days of, I guess, about 10, 15 years ago, when it was network policy that we didn't pay anybody to come on and express his or her point of view. Unfortunately, we live in such a competitive environment today that everybody now expects to be paid. Why should a peace advocate expect to be paid for expressing a point of view without any... I mean, if you're talking about someone who has extraordinary expertise in a particular area, but you'd have to be a little more specific about who, for example, you had in mind.
The Pentagon would put out their point of view for free. Why pay one side? Because more often than not, the generals are commenting on whether we need to go from air war to ground troops moving in.
Once a general, I mean, my experience has been that once a general is out of uniform and no longer in the pay of the Pentagon, he is a little more free to discuss aspects of a policy than he was when he was within the Pentagon. But if what you're saying to me is, do I wish we no longer paid experts at all? You bet. I think everybody ought to come on television for free the way I've just done for you.
All right.
But when you keep these kind of commentators on a regular basis, you end up with a pro-war bias because they're continually doing the play-by-play and you don't have the match.
On the contrary, I think, for example, and he's not one of our paid experts, but you have Wesley Clark, who quite clearly has opposed the war over the past few months. Not quite clearly before the invasion. But again, I mean, you know, it's not necessarily always true that because someone is a four-star or was a four-star general, that he opposes or supports war.
But of almost 400 interviews done around war being pro-war, that's a serious problem.
You told me.
That was Ted Koppel of ABC's Nightline just outside the Fleet Center. Inside, hours later, as the convention was underway, it begins around 4 o'clock every day, we spotted Janet Reno, the former Attorney General of the United States. The way the system works, reporters get a pass that allows them on the floor for about half an hour. Sometimes it takes just a half an hour to make our way onto the convention floor. But we were interviewing Maine Kucinich delegates when we saw the former U.S. Attorney General walk up, the Florida delegation, which she was a part of, just behind the Maine delegation. The Florida delegation getting their signs ready for Bob Graham, the former Democratic presidential candidate. He was about to address the convention. We wove our way to Janet Reno, who had just sat down. Janet Reno was appointed in 1993 by President Clinton, becoming the first woman attorney general in the United States. In 2001, she launched an unsuccessful campaign for Florida governor. It was loud. It was hard for her to hear the questions. But I asked her what she thinks of her successor, Attorney General John Ashcroft.
I think it's important for America to talk out the issues together and with mutual respect, and I hope he will do it.
Do you regret not asking for a recount in Florida?
No.
Why?
Because there was no basis for asking for a recount under the law.
In what way?
Because of the miscounts, we did not reach the level that would permit the recount.
If the whole state were recounted, they said it would have gone to Gore, all the counts show. What is your comment on that?
We don't know for sure.
But do you think that there should have been a recount?
The Supreme Court intervened and made the decision.
But that was later on.
Mm-hmm.
That was later on.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think could have been done differently? Do you have thoughts about what could have been done differently at
the
time?
In 2000? I didn't get involved in 2000 because I was not a candidate.
Do you think the Anti-Terrorism and the Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996...
It was what?
Do you think the Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act of 1996 paved the way for the USA Patriot Act?
Paved the way for what?
The USA Patriot Act. The USA Patriot Act.
What paved the way for it?
The 1996 Effective Death Penalty and Anti-Terrorism Act.
No, I don't.
Why?
I don't see any basis for concluding that the Patriot Act passed with little discussion, followed on the heels of a piece of legislation that was thoroughly discussed.
Right now, the focus of the country is on Florida. Everyone is saying...
You're going to have to speak louder.
I'm sorry. Right now, the focus of the country is on Florida. Concerned that Florida doesn't happen again in Florida.
I think the focus of the country should be on the country as a whole, because each state that has a close election will face the same issues that Florida faced.
How do you think it can be avoided, what happened?
By proper preparation and by citizen involvement.
Are you concerned about electronic voting machines?
I think it's important to understand how we develop the technology that can properly utilize these machines.
Right now, the New York Times today talked about the 2002 voting machines in Florida having crashed, and now they can never be counted or verified. Your thoughts on that?
I think that's an example, again, of the need for developing the education that will prepare people to properly protect the machines, properly ensure privacy, properly utilize the machines to achieve the correct result.
Are you concerned about increased surveillance? Increased surveillance today under the USA Patriot Act?
I think these are issues that we must discuss in a bipartisan, thoughtful way that will achieve the fair and balanced result.
Last question about Native American leader Leonard Peltier. President Clinton did not ultimately grant him clemency. You were Attorney General at that time. What are your thoughts on his case?
I think the decision has been made, and I think it is important if there is new evidence that we look at it, but that we move ahead.
Could you repeat that? I didn't hear what you said.
I think it's important that we review all evidence and make appropriate decisions. We have done so, and now we must move ahead, and if there is new information, we've got to consider it.
Do you think it should be reconsidered? Do you think it should be reconsidered now?
I haven't heard of any new evidence.
Your thoughts at the time, though, Leonard, one last question. At the time, Leonard Peltier was not granted clemency.
Was not what?
Was not granted clemency. But Mark Rich was the man whose family had given, who had given through his wife so much money to President Clinton and to the Democratic Party. Your thoughts on that?
I'm not familiar with the issues with respect to any new evidence with respect to Mark Rich. I am familiar with the situation regarding Leonard Peltier, and I don't think there has been a basis to recommend clemency.
Even the judge at the time...
At that point, the former U.S. Attorney General Janet Reno gestured and stopped the interview, speaking again on the floor of the Democratic National Convention as the speakers were at the podium. Throughout the week at this convention, speaker after speaker has addressed the delegates on the invasion of Iraq, weapons of mass destruction, and reconstruction. Monitoring the primetime coverage, those speakers that get televised around the country, we have heard no real mention of the plight of the Iraqi people, the death toll there, the Abu Ghraib prison scandal we have not heard discussed. Yesterday in Boston, the United for Justice with Peace Coalition and the ACLU held a rally in Copley Square to protest human rights abuses brought on by the so-called War on Terror. Rally speakers included Congress member Dennis Kucinich. Demonstrators donned orange jumpsuits and stood behind wire cages. Here's what some of them had to say.
My name is George Capaccio, and I'm from Arlington, Massachusetts. I'm here with United for Justice with Peace, and I'm one of several dozen folks wearing orange jumpsuits to symbolize and represent the thousands of detainees, or more accurately, captives being held in camps and prisons in Guantanamo, in Afghanistan, Iraq, as well as prisoners being held right here in the United States.
My name is Hashim Burnford, and I'm originally from Milwaukee, Wisconsin, currently residing in Jamaica Plain. Basically, the reason why we're out here today is because we recognize, first of all, that we're concerned citizens and that true patriotism means upholding what this country is supposed to represent. And what that's supposed to be is civil liberties, rights to a fair trial. And we're not in favor of our government kidnapping or holding detainees in this big rush. It's basically a rush of fear, and it's being used to try to turn this world into one giant United States police state.
My name is Sarah Hayes, and I think that one of the things that we're doing out here is reminding people that in the midst of all these media scandals and the huge headlines and the horrible news clips, that there are actual people involved in this, that there are actual human beings who are being affected by what's happening at Guantanamo Bay and Abu Ghraib. And even when you're reading about that, that those are people's lives. And hopefully with the mirrors and the mostly Boston and Cambridge citizens that we have out here, we can remind people of that.
My name is Wati Wampatokas. Agisuk Wankus Waters. I'm with the Leonard Peltier Support Group in the Boston area. I'm originally from Long Island, and I'm down here on this issue of prisoner rights because we're all prisoners, and many of my people are in prison and being tortured under unjust conditions. For having the smallest population in the United States, it's interesting that we have statistically the highest number of our people incarcerated in the prison system. What's going on in the camps in Cuba, in Iraq, is no different than what goes on in your county jail, your state prison, your federal prison.
Sounds of the street in Boston. This is Democracy Now! As tomorrow, we wrap up our coverage of the Democratic National Convention as we broadcast this program. There has been arrest at the critical mass bike ride, and we will, or perhaps I think I got the wrong message, not an arrest right there, but I'll bring you the latest in a minute. But let me give credit where credit is due, and that is the remarkable producers of Democracy Now!, Mike Burke and John Hamilton, Jeremy Scahill, Sharif Abdel-Qaddous, Anna Noguera, Elizabeth Press, Nell Geiser, Prothap Chatterjee, Sakura Sanders, Lee Burek of Free Speech TV. Also, special thanks to our director, Uri Galed, Mike DeFilippo, our chief engineer, John Donovan, and Dennis Dutra of Cambridge Community Television. And the staff here has been absolutely remarkable. Holly Gettings, James Barabas, Gordon Breyer, Daniel Cashin, Sean Clark, Sean Effel, Matt Landry, Artman Martins, Evan Reagan, Vaughn Simpkins, our stage manager, and the director of Cambridge Community Television, Susan Fleischman, Corey Blameyer, Chris Zucker, Ken Michaels and the team at National Boston, Linux producer, programmer Lee Azzarello. There was a protest at the an arrest at the Abu Ghraib protest yesterday, and we'll bring you more on that tomorrow. I will see people today at Borders Bookstore here in Boston, Downtown Crossing at noon. As we continue our Exception to the Rulers tour tomorrow night in Nantucket at the Unitarian Universalist Church. You can go to our website at democracynow.org for all contacts and information, transcripts, and tapes of today's program. Produced at the studios of Cambridge Community Television, special thanks to the City of Cambridge, the unconventional city. I'm Amy Goodman. Thanks for joining us.